Hoffman's thesis, based on his extensive study of British records, is that it was the Irgun's operations from 46 to 48 that drove Attlee's government to seek the guidance of the United Nations as to the future of Mandate Palestine, which ultimately brought the partition proposal of 47 into being. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 185, A Flag is Born. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In 1946, a play premiered on Broadway that we can safely say was unlike any other play in Broadway's history. It was penned by Hollywood screenwriter Ben Hecht, and it was nothing less than a full-throated expression of support for the Irgun's battle against the British. As the historian Raphael Medoff writes, Hecht, quote, understood that the Jewish battle for independence was as much psychological warfare as it was a military struggle, that it was being fought in the court of world opinion and the halls of Congress, at the same time that it was waged in the hills and valleys of the Holy Land. While the British valued Palestine as a strategic Mediterranean outpost, there was a limit to how many casualties the war-weary British people were prepared to suffer, and how much humiliation, international criticism, and tension with the United States they were willing to endure before they reached the conclusion that keeping Palestine was not worth the cost, end quote. The title of the play was A Flag is Born, and one of the books in which the play figures is Bruce Hoffman's Anonymous Soldiers, a work lauded by both right and left for its painstaking research. Hoffman essentially argues that it was the Irgun's operations against the British that were a central and perhaps the primary reason that the British abandoned Palestine and that the UN's partition plan came to be. The book is all the more interesting because, unlike myself, Hoffman is not an ardent admirer of Begin. Rather, he seeks to show how Begin's strategy against Britain, not only militarily, but also in the larger world of public relations, was of immense historical significance. What Hoffman essentially argues is that Begin and the Irgun's allies in America were PR geniuses. The PR operations in the United States was organized by the revisionist Zionist Hillel Cook, also known as Peter Bergson, who raised money for the Irgun in the English-speaking world. Ben Hecht joined the American League for a Free Palestine, created by Bergson. And Hecht, as part of this PR campaign, created A Flag is Born. Raphael Medoff summarizes the play, quote, set in a European cemetery, Flag focuses on two elderly and ailing Holocaust survivors on their way to Palestine, Tevye and Zelda. They pause at the cemetery to rest there on the eve of the Sabbath. In the midst of his prayers, Tevye has a series of visions in which he encounters sages, heroes, and kings from the Jewish biblical past, the perfect platform for Hecht to demonstrate the Jewish people's ancient claim to the Holy Land and to showcase experiences from Jewish history, demonstrating the need for a Jewish state in modern times. The bridge between past and future is provided by the character David, a distraught young survivor of the Treblinka death camp who stumbles into the cemetery during the final part of the play. Tevye and Zelda die, but David is inspired to join the Palestine Jewish underground in its war against the British. In the play's dramatic final moments, David delivers a stirring Zionist speech and marches off to fight for Jewish freedom in the Holy Land, holding a makeshift Zionist flag fashioned from Tevye's prayer shawl. End quote. This was, in other words, no mere play. In fact, it was, as Medoff puts it, the Broadway play that helped create Israel. Let us review the events that we have discussed thus far. As we have seen, following the conclusion of World War II and the pronounced policy of the Attlee government, the Haganah decided to join operations against British locations and bridges in the Holy Land. In fact, upon the formation of the United Resistance Movement, the Haganah was the main member. In response, in June of 1946, Britain launched what was called Operation Agatha, known to the Jews of the Holy Land as the Black Sabbath, when Zionist leaders from the Jewish Agency were arrested en masse. In response, the United Jewish Resistance approved the plan to blow up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, which housed the British headquarters. An order was sent by Ephraim Sneh of the Haganah to Menachem Begin to go forward. Then Sneh asked Begin to delay because Chaim Weizmann had been insisting that cooperation with the Irgun must cease. The committee overseeing joint resistance approved Weizmann's request, but Sneh, as Hoffman writes, did not cancel the operation, but rather resigned in protest and journeyed to Paris, where Ben-Gurion was, hoping to get Ben-Gurion to overrule Weizmann. Following Sneh's original request to Begin to delay, Begin moved the planned bombing to June 19, 1946. Writes Bruce Hoffman, quote, the 19th arrived, and so did another request from Sneh. Begin again agreed to postpone the attack, as did Lechi. It was now decided that the joint operation would take place without fail at 11 on the morning of Monday, July 22nd. End quote. As Avi Shilo notes in his biography of Begin, there are different accounts as to whether another delay was requested by Sneh, but there is no question that Sneh had originally given the order for the operation. The explosives were planted, and then a warning was sent by phone to the British as well as to the office of the Palestine Post, urging evacuation. A call was also made to the nearby French consulate, telling it to open its windows before the explosion. Yet the hotel was not evacuated, and 91 people died. Greer Fay Cashman, in a summary of the events in the Jerusalem Post, tells us that, quote, "At first the mandatory government denied having received the phone warning, but testimony submitted to the interrogating judge made it clear beyond a doubt that such a warning had in fact been given. Moreover, the Palestine Post phone operator attested under oath to the police that, immediately after receiving the message, she had called the duty officer at the police station. The French consulate staff opened their windows, as they had been told to do, by the anonymous woman who had phoned. This was further evidence of the warnings." End quote. Ben-Gurion, in Paris, joined other Jewish agency leaders in denouncing the attack and the Irgun, as if it was utterly unthinkable to him that such an operation could be conceived, even though it had been his own commander, Ephraim Sneh, who had originally ordered the operation. Cashman adds in the Post, quote, "Even David Ben-Gurion, who was then in Paris, joined the chorus of condemnation. In an interview with the French newspaper Francois, he declared the Irgun the enemy of the Jewish people," and Cashman adds, "The denunciation by the Jewish agency totally ignored the fact that the bombing had been carried out as part of the activities of the United Resistance and on the explicit instructions of Sneh." End quote. At this point, operations against Britain militarily was carried on largely without the Haganah. The operations of the Irgun, as Hoffman describes, continued to weaken British prestige around the world, most famously through the one that inspired a famous scene in the book and movie Exodus, the breakout from Akko prison. Following this, British prestige truly began to crumble. Hoffman's thesis, based on his extensive study of British records, is that it was the Irgun's operations from 46 to 48 that drove Attlee's government to seek the guidance of the United Nations as to the future of Mandate Palestine, which ultimately brought the partition proposal of 47 into being. Hoffman notes that in the first part of 1946, British Foreign Secretary Bevin had been convinced that Britain could continue to control the Holy Land for some time, and was utterly opposed to partition and the creation of an independent Jewish state. Hoffman writes that Foreign Secretary Bevin had, quote, "forcefully argued that Britain's stature as a great power was inextricably linked to the maintenance of its Middle Eastern strategic and economic interests. The Foreign Secretary thus had clearly envisioned Britain remaining in Palestine for at least another decade and retaining military basing rights beyond even that time frame. His position accorded completely with that of the Chiefs of Staff," end quote. But after the operations of the Irgun throughout 46, Britain announced that it would allow the United Nations to propose a solution to the situation of Mandate Palestine, with a crucial caveat that it was not bound by its recommendation and that it could seek another solution. And the stage was set for the visit to the Holy Land of UNSCOP, the United Nations Special Committee on Palestine. Meanwhile, in 1946, the PR campaign against British rule was waged in the United States by Bergson and Hecht. And one young man joined their cause because, as both Medoff and Hoffman describe, the actor enthusiastically playing the role of David in A Flag is Born was the not yet famous Marlon Brando. Hoffman further describes how Hecht stood on the stage following the first performance of A Flag is Born and said, "Give us your money and we will turn it into history." It is hard to imagine actors on Broadway today putting on an event on behalf of Menachem Begin, but that is exactly what happened. Hoffman writes that, quote, "In an era long before the advent of 24/7 global news and instantaneous satellite-transmitted broadcasts, the Irgun deliberately attempted to appeal to a worldwide audience far beyond the immediate confines of its local struggle and beyond even the ruling regime's own homeland," end quote. Raphael Medoff, in his article on A Flag is Born, tells us about its importance. He writes, quote, "The response that Flag evoked was due in part to the public sympathy for the victims of Nazi genocide and the Holocaust survivors languishing in European displaced persons camp. But that was not the only reason. The Bergson Group's public information efforts cleverly emphasized symbols, images, and phrases comparing the Jewish fighters in Palestine to the heroes of the American Revolution. The newspaper ads, press releases, and leaflets portrayed Irgun fighters as modern-day Nathan Hales, denounced London's policy of taxation without representation, quoted Thomas Jefferson's memorable phrase, "Resistance to tyranny is obedience to God," and used the motto, "It's 1776 in Palestine." The analogy resonated. In Flag, Tevye at one point addresses a council of representatives of England, France, the United States, and the Soviet Union, and justifies the Jewish armed revolt against the British by offering an extended analogy between Palestine in the 1940s and colonial America in the 1770s. The program booklet for the show featured an illustration of three young Jews, one with a gun, one with a hoe, and one with a Zionist flag, and in the background, the famous illustration of three figures from the American Revolution playing drums and flute. End quote. Medoff further tells us the enormous amount of American support summoned by the play, telling us that the group Berkson assembled, quote, featured prominent names from the world of culture and politics, among them composer Leonard Bernstein, novelist Leon Fuchtwanger, New York City Mayor William O'Dwyer, and former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. The involvement of individuals of such renown was especially irksome to Jewish opponents of Flag, such as Judah Magnus, president of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, who was part of a small group of Jewish intellectuals opposed to the creation of a Jewish state. Magnus's open letter to Mrs. Roosevelt, published prominently in the New York Times, denounced the Flag as born for supporting violence and urged her to dissociate herself from the play. She did not do so. 2 days later, the Times ran a lengthy response from former U.S. Senator Guy Gillette, president of the American League for Freedom in Palestine, defending the play by way of reference to the American Revolution, end quote. It is hard to think of a parallel in American cultural history to A Flag Is Born. And, coming in 1946, it can also be seen as setting the stage for America to truly enter our story. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.